I'm Alana Roche.
And I'm Dr. Lauren Costine. And welcome to The Consciousness Salon.
The Consciousness Salon is a conversation where psychologist Dr. Lauren partners with Alana Roche at The Boundary Boss and community activists to raise individual and collective consciousness through enlivening conversations about psychological and social justice issues.
We will be discussing topics ranging from gaslighting and triggers to identity issues and internalized phobias, and why looking at the world and ourselves from a psychological lens improves mood, increases our sense of self, meaning, life purpose, and so much more.
Hi, Dr. Lauren.
Hi, Alana. How are you?
I'm so good. I'm really well. Thank you. My health is on the beginning of what I think is going to be ultimately what will give me the healing that I've been seeking like my whole life. It's been a lifelong health journey for me, constantly exploring ways to, heal all my allergies and all the things that I was basically born with. And it's a lifelong process. So I'm in this really intense detox right now and taking a ton of supplements. And I'm really hoping that it will lead to, ultimate health. Mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah, no, that sounds empowering. I totally get it. Cause I don't have allergies in the way that you do, like these diagnosable allergies, but I have had food intolerances my entire life. And they didn't know about those when I was younger, but I was taken off milk at like 10. And then I eventually realized I couldn't handle gluten and went on the whole thing then. Cause I just have always had GI stuff. So it's not always easy to stay on. It's hard to keep it sustainable to be really this like clean kind of eating, but
that GI health is so real though.
It's so real because it's connected to the brain as well. It's the second brain, right? And like, if your gut is not healthy, your neurotransmitters are not going to be working well either. It's so connected and influence each other. And then and it's hard to do. It's hard to stay. Cause for me, if I cheat a little, it can go into a whole like binge for a while.
It can spiral.
And I always am in denial. I was talking to you about this, but I really got clear on this denial I go into. And I was talking to Vanessa about it. She's like, "You're in so much denial when you pick this stuff up." Like, and I was like, it's like this part of the brain, the part of the mind is so fascinating because it just can't, it's like, you can do just a little, you'll be fine, and that's not really the case for me. But when I am doing like what you're doing, right, I'm always keeping up on my supplements, but like really eating the way that my body responds well to, when I'm on that track, it's night and day of how I feel and my energy level and weight, everything. So,
yeah. And just, for our listeners, I just want you to know that I am on a Candida cleanse and it is what it is. Super intense and really having a lot of like epiphanies around my eating and how I eat. I mean, eating has been a huge coping.
Yeah.
It's my way of coping with stress, emotions, all the things. And so it's really forcing me to recognize how I eat, why I eat, and what motivates me to eat, recognizing all my cravings. So food addiction's real.
It's real.
And it doesn't help the sugars in most foods, and sugar's really addictive. So yes, I appreciate you bringing up that how much that there's a brain guts and how that does directly communicate to our brain. The good news is that I'm thinking really clearly. having the energy, more energy than I expected. I honestly thought I'd be like crawling across the floor by now, but I actually, my energy level bounced back faster than I expected. And it just made me realize that if you are willing to really commit, you know, hardcore commit just for like literally 10 days, you'd be shocked. So anyhow, so that's where I'm at, folks. Checking in with just lots of health, really proud of myself for being so committed to this process as well, because I am not one to have any willpower at all. You know, I think if I were to do this, I did something similar about, I want to say 8-10 years ago when I was living with my roommate, and it was so much easier because the house is pretty much just void of anything, any temptation.
Yeah, you could get rid of all the stuff, right?
Yeah. And that's usually how I rolled. It was, I knew I didn't have any willpower, so I just set myself up for success.
Yeah, in the same way.
Now living with my partner, who has a sweet tooth. Talk about
rude. So does mine. So does mine. I so get it.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Why? It is challenging. So I'm feeling really good. Feeling really good. And I'm excited about our episode.
Oh, me too. I just wanted to say really quickly, the thing where I'm at right now around this, because I've done the willpower many times. I was telling you earlier, right? I've done like 10 months of no sugar, no grains, I think one cup of coffee every day is fine. I think it's good for you. There's so much, you know, controversy around some of this stuff, but really like humming with my system. And then something will happen and I'll pop out of it and I'll, you know, whether it's stress or a celebration or denial or I deserve this or whatever it is. So what is that? And this is what I don't have an answer yet, but I want to keep our listeners abreast of it, is where, because I have worked on a couple of my other addictions before. And when I got sober from alcohol, drugs and alcohol, it was all through surrender. I completely surrendered. Mm. I turned everything over. I was not in charge.
Yes.
I was in treatment. I got a sponsor. I was doing the 12 steps. I was working the steps. I just turned it over and it was a magical, it was hard because I started feeling my depression and anxiety and my revved upness and all my emotions more. But there was also a magic to sort of how the synchronistic path sort of kind of opened up and unfolded in front of me at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I just felt so taken care of and I knew I was doing the right thing. And I turned my life over. I mean, dramatically, as we know, then I went and got my master's and my PhD. I mean, just, you know, found this career. And then with my love addiction, it was very similar. I was being beaten by it, being hammered, being lots of pain, lots of suffering. And then sort of surrendered and opened up to it. And I feel that this path is similar because I've been doing the self-will, which does work, but I'm finding it harder because with these process addictions, right? You can't get rid of food. I mean, you're trying it this week on this cleanse, right? You're not eating that much. It's not sustainable. And so I just wanted to put that out there as this process I'm in. And I don't have the answer yet because I, like you, we talked about this. We both love food. And I grew up in a family where our motto was, we don't live to eat, we eat to live. Like this was a foodie family and it was a narrative that we were proud of. And, you know, like, so undoing these kind of interesting messages is really, you know, part of it too. It's just sort of a fascinating process. So,
yeah. No, look, we all have our own relationship with food.
Right. And it's intense. I mean, that's why people struggle so much, right?
Yeah. We all use food in various ways. Some who are more, you know, have maybe the kinesiology majors, the health folks, the, you know, I truly think that even those who have chosen those professions, they have their own personal story. That's what motivates them to go in that direction and really conquer their own food challenges. Yeah. And I'm in a place where that's where I'm at. You know, I really want to go. I'm going to be 40 at the end of the year. And I just really would love to go into my 40s with a certain level of health that I have not been able to really attain up till now.
Right. It's been
a quality of life,
right,
that I haven't been able to fully live in.
Yeah.
In terms of my health.
It's exciting.
It's what drives this process for sure. People, you know, look at me and they're like, what, you know, and I'm like, well, I can really mask my ailments in life really well. I spent a lifetime learning how to do it, but it's still really limiting in a lot of ways. So,
well, it's a lot. Yeah. I mean, all of it's energy and, you know, and I think, but it is empowering to take charge of it as well and say, okay, I'm committed to this. I think that can be really energizing too, because there's like hope and, you know, there is power in that, really. It's like, I'm not going to be, you know, subjected to this anymore. I want to have some say. Yeah.
I think that was definitely the energy that I used to get into it. Now the only thing that keeps me sustaining is going, I lost some weight. I mean, I think that's the only thing, because yes, the energy feels great. I'm glad I have energy. I love that I'm thinking clearly. I'm glad that I feel and that I'm as productive. I'm more productive than I expected to be. And yet I don't think any of it is as exciting or validating as stepping on the scale at this point, just being honest.
I'm looking
forward to stepping on the scale now versus throw that thing in the trash.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I just want folks to know that, you know, whatever journey you're in, you know, whatever health journey you're in, whatever your relationship with food is, you know, I get that. Like you said, you know, there's a serious sobriety component to food as well. There's an addiction component to, there's a recovery component. That kind of model still reflects in those dynamics and that.
Yeah, and getting kind of that, like, that sort of having a process relationship with it instead of a content relationship. Like, it's not about like the food or what I'm doing or da-da-da. It's like, how am I relating to my stress, my triggers? What makes me want to eat? Am I getting in touch with that? Or am I just mindlessly saying, I got to eat something and giving into that? You know, all of that is, I think.
All of it.
Part, and we can keep checking in about it, because you and I are both really into it. I mean, I've been into it for years too, and you're into it. And because I also don't have a body that just runs easily. I've been forced into this for 15 years. I've been doing this like really intensely, and I'm still in it.
I'm always so inspired by your commitment to your health as well. Yeah. I mean, and there is a sobriety component in the sense of, like, I literally have to be sober through this process.
Yes.
Like, I can't drink.
Like, no, that's right.
Sugar is in everything that is alcohol. It's everywhere.
And alcohol is hard on the system in other ways too, not just the sugar, but you know what I mean? Like, it, you know, yeah.
But I can ignore all that.
Right.
But what I don't think about is the sugar. I just don't think about it.
Okay.
Just doesn't occur to me.
But that helps when you're really looking at the sugar.
Yeah, the sugar. I'm like, wow. Okay. Yeah, I don't even think. I mean, honestly, not drinking hasn't been hard. It's fine. I'm like, that's great. You know what's hard? Not wanting to have popcorn.
Yes, I know.
Or chips and salsa.
No,
and
guacamole. I know. Oh my God.
I'm the savory person where I just like, those are all the snacks. That is not having tortillas, not having breakfast burritos.
I can't believe you how much on the same page we are. I mean, like, I had to get rid of my popcorn addiction though, like a year and a half ago. I mean, it because it got nutty. Like, I was just like, are you kidding me? I don't feel well. But I love that stuff more than anything. I think going to the theater, walking in a theater, which of course I haven't done yet, even though they're opening, and smelling it. There's this whole thing I have to go through of, I don't even like buttery popcorn, but just smelling it at a theater, it's like, it's a whole thing, right? It's like,
it's a whole thing.
Okay, I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to have any. Now I feel deprived. What does that make me feel like? Well, that's not fun. My rebel certainly doesn't like that because she doesn't ever want to be deprived.
You know, I'm actually really good about it. If I don't go with someone, like my mom and I, if we were to go to the movies together, we're so good. We're like, let's go, beeline right to the movie. But if I go with my partner,
forget it.
We get all the things. And then I sit there and after an hour, I'm like,
oh,
you know,
totally.
I try, but it's right in front of me. And I'm like, oh, killing me, the smell.
So I love salt. Oh my God, me too.
I love it.
I love salt. Pink salt has been a savior. Himalayan salt has been a savior. I feel like, well, at least it's a little healthy.
Yeah. Anyway.
So that's not even what we meant to talk about today.
I feel like we should just make this episode about food addiction.
All right, let's do it.
Let's just switch gears.
Okay.
I mean, isn't there a support group for food addiction?
Yeah, so I actually have gone to it. It's called OA, you know, it's for after Overeaters Anonymous.
But Overeaters Anonymous.
And that's right. So that's a 12-step group. But it also, you can go, you know, it's all about relationship to food. So there's many different subcategories in it. And I've gone, that's, when I went many years ago, it was to overcome what had turned into in my recovery from love addiction, this insane sugar addiction that I'd never had before. But I found myself literally like leaving the house to go get a brownie at Fresh Corn Grill.
Like, so when you recovered from love addiction, you found sugar as your next addiction.
Exactly. And it felt, and it made me feel really out of control. Like the insanity of like, it's 8 o'clock at night, I'm home and I want to leave the house to go get a brownie. I was like, okay, I'm losing the plot here. Like I gotta reel this in. Cause it wasn't so much the brownie because in that moment, the sugar was helping calm me down. It was making me feel better in the instant gratification sense. But I was already feeling out of control and spinning in my mind from the love addiction recovery. And then adding the fact that this, all of a sudden, this intense like desire for sugar was making me feel even more crazy. And that said, okay, I've got to also get some help. And I did. And it was incredible, very supportive. And I would get up and speak and say, I've got 2 months off of sugar, and everyone would be so supportive. And at about 6 months, I was like, okay, I feel good. I'm, you know, I've got so much going on. So I haven't done it again, but I, without a doubt, am very clear on the fact that since I was a child, I have had a challenging relationship with food. And I watch my nephews and I watch my stepson Cameron, and they do not have it. They do not overeat. They eat till they're full. They know when they're full. They stop. They're pickier eaters than I was, but they also just are like, oh, here's food. I need it for nourishment because I'm hungry. Okay, I'm done. Okay, let me go off and do something else. And I just watch it with amazement.
Why do you think that is?
They're not finding that.
Do you think it's like genetic?
I do think it's partly genetic for sure. Both my parents, like my mother before she passed away, had gained a bunch of weight for her and was very uncomfortable and very addicted to like noodles and rice noodles and like just those kind of carbs, those kind of starches. And she had gained weight. And my father has now sort of gained weight. And so and like I said, there was definitely food addiction in my family growing up. And I was kind of a strange child in the sense that I liked very adult food from a very early age. And then I got lots of accolades for that. It was like, oh, Lauren,
sophisticated palate.
Yes. Wow. Look at Lauren. She'll eat spinach and she likes lamb curry. And wow, she'll eat, filet mignon and all these like weird adult food that I liked. And
you were like affirmed for your developed palate.
And I didn't like kid food. Like I didn't want peanut butter and jelly. So there was a way in which I got like praise and sort of felt special around that. So that kind of didn't help. But I remember now when I look back, there were specific times, and they were usually celebrations, going out for a nice dinner or someone's birthday or something, where I would overeat. I would totally overeat because it wasn't like I was going to get to do that the next day. It was like, oh, this is special. We're not going to get to do this for a while. And then I'd feel sick. And so it started early. And I remember when I got sober from alcohol, I was able to look back and say, wow, my first addiction was food. And it's not as out of control as this one, but it's a challenge. And
alcohol is sugar, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
it's not surprising that when you cut that out, you go to
food,
sugar in food.
And I have to say, I have said on several occasions, I think it helped me stay sober because there were times.
The sugar did?
And food, just food. Like.
And food.
I'm stressed. I'm dealing with a lot of stress right now. I'm going to have a really nice meal or I'm just going to have chips and salsa. I don't care. I get the fuck it's. Call it the fuck it's. I love the fuck it's.
All about the fuck it's.
Yeah, fuck. And it would be like. I would go and get chips and salsa and make brownies and do all this stuff. And then I'd be like, yeah, okay, now I'm fine. I'm good.
That with dairy for years and dairy just destroys me. I end up being on like 8 things of Benadryl, dairy is just,
wow.
It really impacts my system where it just shuts me down for the next day or two.
How my so? Like body, fatigue?
Inflammation.
Okay.
Just full-blown inflammation where my sinuses, runny nose, postnasal drip. Everything's inflamed and I can't get it under control. So I did that for years.
Would have it anyway. You'd be like, oh, you'd get the fuck it. You'd have dairy and then you'd have 2 days of like all this awfulness. Okay, the consequences. So the denial would be, remember, we were just talking about denial for a second. It's like the denial would be, oh, I can handle the 2, or I'm not going to get it, or I can handle it, or whatever it is. Like, oh, whatever. It doesn't matter. I'll just deal with 2 days of this horrible reaction.
Honestly, that is all accurate. And it usually resulted around my cycle.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
It's just like when the temptations were too hard to deny.
Yeah. Totally. Yep. I get it.
And I swear it's like my cycle has its own brain. Mm-hmm. All the hormones, everything shifted around, having a party on my dime. So,
yeah. And they're doing their own thing. Like, it's not like there's much you can do about it,
Right.
Because it's going through its cycle, right?
But I eventually got to the place where I'm like, I can't do this anymore. This is tiring.
So you hit a bottom,
so to speak,
right? Around the dairy.
So to speak, I hit a bottom. This is right. We can apply all these same concepts, right? I hit a bottom with dairy. And when it comes to dairy, I just want to be clear. Like, I think the big component the major shift for me was when oat milk was released.
Oh,
when oat
wonderful.
Milk became like a thing, because I was doing a lot of soy. So oat milk really got me off of soy, but it also just got me off of dairy in general. It just really helped me.
So the dairy you would do.
I started having oat milk ice cream.
Got it. Okay. So you could then have ice cream.
Yeah.
Instead of just.
Because even soy ice cream I was having, but it was fine, but it wasn't, I wasn't being like drawn to it, but oat milk ice cream works. And because it's been so long since I've had Like, it's been so long since I've had pizza. And let me tell you, there's been numerous occasions where I could have. But again, it's that mantra of like.
And I, you know what? I want to commend that a lot, because I got to tell you something. I love pizza. Like, I'm telling you, it is one of those foods. Clearly, it's this way for so many people because there's pizza everywhere.
But I love pizza.
It is an amazing dish. So
I love bread.
Bread, cheese, put them together. It's like,
oh man, you
know, there's nothing better. I hear you, but I can't do it either.
I had to pretend. I had to just like shut it out of my mind. Like, that's not an option. It's not as good as you think it is. You know, and I'm fine. But then if, you know, Katrina brings home a pizza, she's watching sports.
And
I can smell it in the house. It's the smell. It kills me. So I try to have a pizza, like a non-dairy pizza, like a, you know, soy, whatever pizza. And I pop it and I eat that.
Does that help?
It gets the job done. Let's just say that.
Okay.
The alternatives have helped me get through this for sure.
Yeah, I agree. It does help a lot.
It is what it is. I mean, so I'm at the point where I've cut out this, I've cut out this, I've cut out this, I've cut out this, I've cut out this. Now I'm like, okay, I've done the alkaline, I've done the things. Where are we at, body? Work with me here. Let's get to it. Let's be done. So we'll see.
I can so relate. I mean, I have a similar system. It's very sensitive. And I literally have to cut out most things in the world that taste delicious. Mm. Not that when I'm eating clean, it also tastes delicious, right? And what I mean by clean is like what works for my body. I don't mean like, you know, just when I'm eating, when I'm not eating the red foods or even the yellow foods that much, I'm just eating all my green light foods, right? The ones that are on the list that my body loves, and there's no inflammation and there's no reaction and there's no consequence and there's no, this is so helpful just to talk it out with you, Alana, because I feel like there is this part inside of me, and this is so much of what we've been talking about too, right? Like this parts therapy where like we really start to differentiate the different parts inside of us and what their motivations are and how they try to get their needs met, which can be counter to what we really is good for us or what have you. There's a part of me that's very rebellious, and there's a part that rebellious side doesn't like to be deprived. Then I start feeling deprivation. I'm being deprived. And then the denial is, oh, I can just do a little, which is exactly the same if you're going to like tell yourself you can just have one beer and you actually cannot drink, right? It's a very similar thing.
This doesn't send me
down to like destroying my life, but it does send me to a place where I'm not feeling as good. My energy's lower. My head is not as clear, dysregulated in a more nuanced way.
Yes.
So as I'm talking to you about it, it's like, how can I work with that part that feels deprived? I think that would be helpful.
Yeah. How do we honor that part?
Mm-hmm.
How do we honor the deprivation in ways that is nourishing versus backfiring? Right. Cause I feel like, that part hasn't been given enough attention or explored.
Exactly. And then after even 12 weeks of it, she's like, screw you. Like, you know, I want what I want. I haven't had anything
really clear.
I'm
fully showing up to this party. Screw you, screw you, screw you, screw you.
And I'm going to push it so hard inside that you're going to get the fuck it.
Yeah. Like you need to deal with me.
I am here now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the thing. So how does she be seen?
How do we calm her?
Yeah. How is she calm?
How do we meet her need without giving her exactly what she thinks she wants?
Exactly. That's a really good question. I mean, I wonder if that would be really helpful to do in the next episode in a really conscious way of going, doing that sort of,
because that's definitely inner reflection.
That imaginal exercise we did together with the inner child. We could go and do it with her and see what she says.
Yeah, because all I can imagine is that when that rebel comes up for me, I'm just constantly looking for alternatives. You know, if it's pizza, I'll get the dairy-free pizza. You know, if it's sugar, for instance, I got the okay with monk fruit and stevia for like if I wanted to have coffee. By the way, I don't need coffee. I get up and I have plenty. My mind is so clear. I don't need any caffeine at this point.
Isn't that wonderful? That's great.
So, yeah, but if I wanted coffee, I can't have oat milk because there's still sugar in oat milk. So I need to use the stevia or the monk fruit to put, you know, so I'm just.
So you can't have oat milk because there's sugar in it?
There's still sugar in it.
There's no sugar-free oat milk.
I just haven't found it.
Wow. Because I'm using oat milk now because it's better for the environment. And
right, than almond. Right.
Yeah, almond.
Yeah, milk. I mean, it's sugars in everything.
But you can get unsweetened almond milk. That's the thing. You can get no sugar in almond milk. Zero.
Zero.
But it's not good for the environment. We've got to reduce our dependency on almonds.
Yeah,
there's no sugar-free oat milk yet. Okay. Hey, I mean, you oat milk manufacturers out there, would you please make a sugar-free version? We will supplement it with stevia or monk fruit. We're good. Yeah, we can figure it out.
We can figure it out. Yeah. If there is, I haven't found it, but maybe there is. But I just know that. That's why it's so important that I had to like really bare bones this process.
Yeah. So without the, so.
Like among cabbage and onions. Luckily I like cabbage and onions.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I'm good with it, but it's real. Mm-hmm. But luckily I don't need coffee in the morning, so I don't need to worry about oat milk. Luckily I'm not having cereal. I'm not having anything that is remotely so
that needs oat milk. So you're really, really getting sugar out of your diet as much as you possibly can because it's snuck in a lot of things, but that's great. That's great.
I'm happy to include resources such as like there's a cookbook I bought. There's just so much. There's so many resources out there.
So many resources. Yeah.
And it's, you know, I think people are aware of Candida and, but it's so interesting. Even my conversation with my Western doctor versus my holistic doctor, like my Western doctor, he was like, yeah, you should, as long as you're getting protein. I was like, oh, protein. I didn't even think about that. Okay. I'll do that. You know, I use this one protein. He's like, well, the office uses this protein and he understands that I'm doing this cleanse. But then I show both proteins to my other doctor, my holistic doctor. And the one I've been using this whole time is the one she prefers. Apparently the one he recommends still has sugar in it. So it's just, you know, this is where we have to be really careful about, you know, the providers, our health providers and the, you know, their advice. Their medical advice when you're trying to explore your own health, really trust your intuition, make sure that you are really leading and spearheading your own health and trusting yourself in that process.
And looking into the holistic approach, right? Like Western medicine, I definitely don't throw it out. I've seen people that throw it out entirely and I find that to be extreme.
Oh, I agree with you.
No, but I mean, but also knowing, because I worked in a hospital for many years and I saw what their training did. And when I started doing like when I started working with holistic practitioners, and then they would ask for like a bunch of different blood tests. And my physician at the time was like, oh, your exotic blood tests. He was saying, like, it was so weird to him. And I was like, well, will you please just test for them anyway? And he did. He was fine, but he would sort of do this.
But you have to push for it, right? Yeah. Because it's not part of their standards.
And
they're not interested.
He thought it was weird. He thought it was strange, you know? And I was like, okay, that's fine. He doesn't get it. Because I think that's where my compartmentalization is actually healthy. Because I'd be like, okay, he doesn't get it, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to do it. He's helpful here. This person's helpful there.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Right.
And let me get a SIBO test.
Right.
Let me get tests for HPL. Okay, I'll go to this system on the Western side.
Yes. Get all the assessments. Process. Yes, exactly.
Get all that data.
Yes.
And then fill in the gaps, you know?
Right.
My other doctor is running different... You know, my doctor's not running the same test though. You know,
no.
they're just not.
No, they're not.
You know, my doctor literally said, you know, it's actually good to have some yeast or have some candida. You know, there's still, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, bro.
It's not working for me.
Let's not do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just let's not do this. So even he recommended Citrucel, which is would help with bowel movements, which is great when I was having a lot of indigestion. But I looked at it, and even though it says sugar-free, there's sugar in the ingredients.
Oh my God, are you serious?
So really, what is sugar-free?
Yeah, no, what does that mean? Sugar?
This is my point. I mean, it's a whole thing. So
You know what? Another one of the misleading things that I found out about, if it says all natural, that still means it can put MSG in it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's a whole other thing that's hidden.
I can't. I literally can't.
Yeah.
So we really have to be our own cheerleaders in our own health and navigating all of it, because so much of it is so insidious and complicated and unnecessarily complicated.
I think I'm really
shout out to all the holistic doctors.
Right. So much. And I'm just grateful that I find this so interesting, because that's really been helpful for me to keep doing all the investigating and digging in and learning about all of this stuff, because it is really fascinating. Actually, it's good to know all these different components that are going on.
Yeah, and let's just be clear. I spent my whole life trying to make Western medicine work for
me.
I've done the allergy shots.
Right.
I've done them all.
Oh, that's an important point.
I did allergy shots in high school. I did it for like 7 years, from junior high to high school.
Did it help at all?
No.
Wow. There you go. That's why you end up doing the alternative, because you're like, this Western stuff doesn't work.
It doesn't work. So, yeah. I mean, it worked. It does work in some regards.
There's it might have helped a little bit, right?
In certain ways, it's helped. I'm grateful for it. I'm not trying to like, but it is so important that we understand how to balance the two for ourselves, I think, to achieve ultimate health.
Yeah. And I think that all this alternative stuff, I'm so grateful for the access to information that we have today. It's like,
absolutely.
The internet is a monster in many ways, and it's created a lot of shadow stuff, of course, because that's how this planet works. But then access to all this incredible people, information, all the people that are doing all this work, it's amazing.
So amazing.
And you know, that kind of leads me to another point before we wind down, and we can continue to talk about this too, but brain health has really come online, and I love it. And then this whole neuro hacker world is really interesting to me.
I know, you got me into it with the Edge Effect.
Such
a great book. Folks, get the Edge Effect. It's such a good book.
Such a good book.
Help me navigate all the symptoms I was having, thinking I had perimenopause.
Oh, that's great.
I thought I was experiencing perimenopause the last couple of years. And Dr. Lauren was so kind to be like, you need to check out this book called The Edge Effect. You need to buy it and really dive into it. And it is so eye-opening. Highly recommend it.
So what did it help you, real in like elevator speech? What did it help you do?
Oh, wow. Elevator speech? Like elevator pitch? I don't know if I can condense it, because it's so... there's so much juiciness in it, but it really helped me understand how our body naturally evolves, hormones start to drop And I knew that about human growth hormone. I knew that human growth hormone at the age of 30 drops dramatically, like 70%. Mm-hmm. Right. And, but I didn't realize how this was happening in other ways, you know, why people can start to experience andropause in their 30s or 40s, or, you know, and also just have this conversation about perimenopause and how, you know, people are like, oh, well, you're still having your cycle, so it must not be perimenopause. It's like, why is that so quickly discounted?
Right.
Because exactly. I'm still having my cycle, right? Why is it so black and white? So really diving into that and understanding that symptoms can start showing in your late 30s, as early as your late 30s. It's actually common. People just don't talk about it. So really, he just touches on how our bodies are shifting and evolving and how different hormones are decreasing. And because they're decreasing, but in the end, he's really offering a ton of guidance and supplements around how to work with our brain and how to basically hijack our brain, because all of our brains could be GABA, right? GABA, dopamine.
Yes, yes. The four neurotransmitters.
The four neurotransmitters. And it was just eye-opening to see what my dominant transmitters were and where my weak ones were and how I can supplement to kind of boost my weaker transmitters. It was all just so enlightening. So if folks are really interested in really knowing how to, you know, tap in, really like make your brain more high functioning or just fully understand how your brain is operating, he has tests on there, self-assessment tests.
I like his assessment test, because what I've found with that is like, there's this amazing brain imaging going on now, but it's still insanely prohibitively expensive. So you could actually go and get your brain.
At Dr. Amen's?
Yeah, Dr. Amen's. But it's.
Yeah, like, we know all about Dr. Amen's right. In this household.
But it's, you know, thousands.
It's expensive.
Thousands. It's extremely expensive.
Yeah.
This book allows you to get not exactly the same information, but similar kind of information about how your brain is firing, in what direction and what direction it's not firing, where it needs help, where it needs some. And without having, encouragement without going and getting a full scan.
Like a $3,000 scan.
Yeah, I think it's like six. I mean, like.
It's something. It's probably like $4,000. I can't remember. It changed during the pandemic. I mean, Dr. Amos has been on our radar since I've met Katrina.
Yeah, no, yeah. And I've seen him speak at the Evolution of Psychotherapy. It was really, really helpful. Yeah, and he showed all these brain scans. I love it. I just wish more folks were doing it and it wasn't so expensive. But anyway, so this book is helpful to know
what a good introduction.
And your dominant neurotransmitter and where you can get some help and how food plays a huge part and then supplements, right? But ultimately it comes down to food, and then we go back to the discipline piece and I think, and also what's been very motivating for me in this sense around brain health is that when I started, I have always worked with this really, really progressive thinking psychiatrist. And he basically was saying, what we're realizing is, we're really not wired to live this long. Okay. That's the bottom line. Just, you know, in the last 100 years, you know, you could die at 40, 50, 60, right? So we're living so much longer for a variety of reasons, right? But our brains are having a hard time keeping up. And what I've noticed with myself and then clients, you get into your 50s and 60s and your brain isn't working as hard. And then it becomes really important to try to, you know, keep it as healthy as your body is staying, right? And for me, a big motivator was, well, I don't want to end up with all, I mean, I saw a documentary on Alzheimer's and I was like, you know, euthanize me if this happens. Like, this is, my wife was like, I'm not giving you a pill. I'm like, give me a pill. Like,
right.
I do not want to live strapped to a wheelchair.
Like, I'll give you the pill.
Thank you. You know what? Thank you.
You I got
get
you,
it.
Lauren.
You so got
I
it.
Got you.
You so got it.
Partners are hard. Partners are hard. Friends, I think, is a little bit easier.
A lot easier. It's like, this is the agreement. Just, you know, it's all for the best. There's no point in
your
being on this.
Your wife might kill me, right? But, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Exactly. But also in that empowering way, like what you're doing right now with this cleanse and like really, you know, doing all this incredible research and understanding everything that's going on and taking charge of your health in so many ways. We can do the same thing with our brain, so that it doesn't mean necessarily you won't have issues, but at least you're trying. So this neural hacker world, and we can get more into it later, is it's like live long, live healthy, right? And then die fast. So it's like what we found, what's happening is, you know, folks are sort of taking a long time to pass, you know, and obviously that's easier on the family. I get it, because my mother passed away very quickly and it was traumatizing. But for the person who is here, do you want to take 10 years to go with your mind going and all of that? So these are big conversations. I don't want to just skip over them or talk about them lightly, but it's another component of the motivation factor that I think is really interesting, and that we do have all this information today to really take charge of these things.
You know? We do. We have a ton of resources. We have a lot of education, a lot of resources, the research is there.
Yeah.
So I'm just grateful for all of it. And I'm totally open to learning as much as I can and better understanding how to, you know, extend the shelf life, but really just maximize the quality.
Exactly. It's maximize the quality. No matter how long it's going to be, but maximize the quality. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't need to live for, you know, a long life, but the time I'm here, I definitely want to be running on all cylinders.
Exactly. Well said. All right, my friend. This has been great as always.
Love chatting with you, Dr. Lauren.
I love chatting with you, Alana.
Till next time.
Till next time, everyone.
Thanks for listening in, everyone.
Yes, we love you.
Food addiction. How it impacts our brain. All the things. If you have any topics you want us to share or explore and unpack, please send them our way. All of our email and contact is on the link below. And until next time, take care of yourself.
Till next time.
Thank you, Dr. Lauren.
Thank you, Alana.
Bye.
The Consciousness Salon is owned, operated, and produced by Alana Roche and Dr. Lauren. Music is produced by DJ Roche and edited by Tyler Hood.
We would love to hear from you, and there are a number of ways to contact us. My website is www.drlaurencostine.com. That is DrLaurenCostine.com. And I also have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram page.
You can reach me at www.theboundaryboss.com. That is TheBoundaryBoss.com. And The Boundary Boss is on both Instagram and Twitter.
This podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Lauren Costine and Alana Roche and their guests on the show. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. It is for informational purposes only, and because each person is so unique, please consult your healthcare professional for any medical or mental health questions. Thank you.